Do you have a goal in mind? Hello, this is Jeff Bellier. Welcome to the Mind Goal Hour. Again, my name is Jeff Bellier. That's Bellier. You say it like ringing a bell, Bellier. Some people, quite a few people, call me Papa Jeff. Remind me to tell you that story sometime. Well, you won't have to remind me. I love the story, so I'm sure I'll tell you. During this Mind Goal Hour, and hopefully Mind Goal Hours to come, we're going to be talking about goal setting and strategies for achieving goals. All manner of goals, from career goals, relationship goals, health goals, spiritual goals, success goals of all sorts. I work with a lot of people on, I have quit smoking programs, losing weight, strategies for handling stress better, and tonight we'll even talk about strategies for improving your golf game or improving performance in any of your favorite sports, whatever they may be. Now, this won't be the typical, dreary, dreadful, tedious mission of mainstream goal-setting practices. I take a little different approach, so you won't have to plan every 15-minute segment of your life for the rest of your life. My goal achievement strategies, that's what my business is called, they're more balanced and spontaneous. So there's no Palm Pilot, no PDA, no day planner. There's just a balanced use of your mind, and that's going to be in ways that may surprise you. It may require some dusting off and some surprising ways of using your mind. And actually, I say using your mind, but it really is using your head and your heart. And we look to achieve a balance. I'm going to give you some examples like that. And you'll find that I love talking in some metaphor. I love using acronyms. And so if you have a goal in mind, or you've had a goal in mind for years, maybe like every New Year's, you know, and that something shows up on your list every New Year in that resolution, you never stick with it or accomplish it, maybe tonight I can give you some strategies and some techniques that you can apply in your life to achieve that goal. And often I'm going to start with an acronym. When you have a goal in mind and you've had difficulty achieving it, you haven't achieved it yet, or you've achieved it only for a short time, it hasn't really been successful for you, I have an acronym I call SIFT. So that you're in the sifting process, and that SIFT, the SIFT, that stands for strategy is flawed temporarily. You're in a sifting process. That just means the strategy that you're using to achieve your goals, this isn't working for you, and it's time to be flexible and adopt a new strategy. So before we talk about some specific goals, because there are reasons we set goals, obviously, I want to ask you a question. How do you define success? Just think about that for a second, okay? All right. Now, if I would use my incredibly attuned psychic powers, and I could tell you exactly what was on your list, and I could precisely come up with your definition of success, you'd be dazzled and amazed, right? Well, get ready to be dazzled and amazed, because I can. And you know why I can do that? Because success is the same for everyone. And you say, no, that's very subjective. I have my own list. Success is a certain thing for me. Well, sure it is. But you know what's on your list? What you think will make you happy and content. That's why we set goals. We look at things in our life and we say, what will make me happy and content? What is going to bring me happiness and contentment? So whatever you have on your list and whatever I have on my list of goals that I want to achieve in this lifetime, whether it's a better car, a better relationship, a bigger house, a new job, any of those things on my list are what I think will bring me happiness and contentment. And that's what we think. As I said, we're going to dust off some places of your mind, maybe your heart, that maybe need to be dusted. You know, by way of illustration, I listened to 60 Minutes a few weeks ago, maybe then a few months ago now, and Tom Brady was on. You have to be a big sports fan to know who Tom Brady is. He's the quarterback of the New England Patriots. Now, here's a young man who's, I think he's 28 or 29 years old. He's still in his late 20s. Now, he owns a couple of Super Bowl rings. He's a starring quarterback of an NFL team. He's got multi-million dollar contracts for his sports ability. He's got multi-million contracts because of his celebrity, endorsing food he does and different products. So here's a young man, 28 years old, handsome, 6'4", a sports hero, money that he'll never live long enough to spend. He's engaged to a model at this point, I believe. And so there's sports, money, and women. Now, that's a pretty dream ingredient to success for just about anyone in the world, for men, and not necessarily in that order, but in the middle of his show, as he talked about this and he was interviewed, He just stunned me. He said, there's still a question on my mind. And what I asked myself is this all there is?
Now,
if we list things in our list that are going to bring us happiness and contentment, how could we find anything in our list that would top that? Here's this young man, and is this all there is?
When
I heard that question,
I know
the answer.
Don't think of it like that. But I said, because you're thinking along those terms.
And before I cover that, I'm going to come back to the Tom Brady story. I want to give you a little bit of my story, of how I developed my goal achievement strategies, and how I came to do what I do. And I may even talk about how I came to be known as Puppy Cat. I'm going to go way back.
Said goodbye.
I was 10 years old.
You know what I mean?
I was in a fifth grade class. I remember where I was sitting, and that's quite a few years ago.
So I went along with it.
And we were studying world religions.
All right.
Yeah, and in the context of studying these world religions, we came across the Hindu religion. And I was at first horrified with the caste system, which
isn't
effectively in place there. Well, it certainly isn't some instances, and I'm not saying anything like that. But as I read about it, I read about something called nirvana.
I don't know what it is,
and the way it was described in the book, I can see the words. And these are precisely the words that I read about nirvana. The caste system, if you're not familiar with it, essentially in this Hindu system, talks about reincarnation and how you come back in different levels. That karma, how you conduct your life will determine how you come back at the next level, and this is kind of a capsule of it. Well, you come back and you come back and you come back, and eventually you reach, or potentially you reach nirvana. And nirvana was described in this book on world religion, and I'm 10 years old at this point, as perfect peace of mind, utter tranquility. When I read those words, they just resonated in my heart. Now, I was 10 years old. I had, from the time I was 4 or 5 years old, I had gone through every childhood disease you could name. I think some of them no longer around. I had chicken pox and whooping cough and measles and a bout with scarlet fever and in the hospital with pneumonia. And then I had my tonsils out. As a result, I spent a lot of time inside. Back in those days, they quarantined you to get scarlet fever. And so I became, by 7 or 8 years old, a sickly-looking, pale, and because I was artistic, poetic type, I spent a lot of time alone, and I did a lot of writing, and I began to draw, and I found that I could draw. Well, I was born into a Catholic family, a French-Irish, volatile Catholic family in New England, and my mother and father divorced when I was very, very young, and I ended up living with my grandparents. And I would get to know my aunts and uncles pretty well because they would be between breakups and divorces and back and forth in the house. But in our house, when I was growing up, physical encounters between siblings, between father and son, screaming matches between sisters and mother and daughter was a pretty common practice. I remember hands being shown. I remember my grandmother, God rest her soul, a beautiful woman, breaking a plate over my grandfather's head. Well, I was terrified most of the time. So I just did not fit into the family. And when I read this, perfect peace of mind, utter tranquility, I want to find that. I really want to find that. But I had a real longing in my heart from an earlier event. And I began going to different churches. And I started with not the Catholic Church, because my mother got a divorce, so I wasn't in the Catholic Church. I started with what I call Catholic Light, the Episcopal Church. And I listened, and I wanted to hear about this perfect peace of mind, and I began to hear about it. And occasionally I would shift and say, this is where I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it in the church. And I went from church to church to church to church to church for years and years, and finally, by the time I was 23, I had lost that interest for a period of time and went through my teen years. But at 23, it began to come again, and I was back in churches. And at 23, I was baptized in the Protestant denomination. And I expected at this baptism to receive that perfect peace of mind and utter tranquility. Well, it didn't come. The ceremony was finished, and I had the same question that Tom Brady had. Is this all there is? Is this it?
This girl is so hot.
I spent the next few years, I like to say I caught the last train to Hippieville. I ended up in an ashram, a Hindu temple, in Buffalo, New York. And After, I believe it was like 68 days, I was selected for initiation into this order. At the time, it was called Divine Lightning. I had the guru. I had the long hair. And there was a great show. It was an Eastern culture that I had been exposed to before, and so I found it fascinating. And one evening during in the teachings, we had a called a Mahatma at the time, a very big round woman, short and big round, sweet, sweet woman, who wore a saffron robe with a beautiful dark skin and a red dot in her head. And she beautiful little three legs, and she would tell us about achieving certain peace of mind. And one day, early in the morning, in a teaching called the satsang, she used exactly those words, that the guru will teach you perfect peace of mind out of tranquility. Well, I was captivated. I was signed on. And so I lived in the ashram. I stayed there. And I stayed a month. I came to the point where I was elected to receive initiation. And during the initiation, and we were taught meditation techniques and took vows not to divulge what we had talked about and sort of thing. You can read about all of them on the internet these days. We were going through the process, and we were about halfway through. And by that time, I had taken some graduate courses in sensation and perception. I'm very much involved in communication and marketing, and I found my mind picking apart the ceremony and saying, oh, this is nothing but, and this is just that. And I came to a point where I utterly gave up. I just stopped having any expectation. And we were then shown a very simple technique, and I'm going to talk about it a little later on, because it shows up at the basis of all meditation techniques. I teach a meditation class now called the Mystic Heart Meditation. I'm going to talk about it tonight. I got certified in hypnotherapy, relaxation techniques, yoga. There's a basis in all of these, and it always starts with one particular event or technique, if you will. And this technique is something that we all do naturally every day, and I will tell you about that, okay? So as I entered this very simple natural technique, and I had dropped all expectations, I had just given up on finding anything here. I decided I was going to continue my look. I was going to leave after this ceremony. I didn't want to disrupt it. I didn't want to be uncivilized. So I said, well, I'll stay. I'll just go through the motion, and then I'll leave. Well, in the next few minutes, I experienced what is typically reported by near-death experiences. In a quiet moment of a silent meditation, I felt myself flip upside down and go shooting out into dreamland, if you will, as if in a lucid dream. And I found myself on the side of a mountain walking on a dirt path. In front of me, off to my left, standing beside a large rock, there's a glowing figure, a white-robed glowing figure. Well, my culture immediately plugged Jesus into that role. There was a light being. I didn't see a face. All I saw was a light being. And as I approached this light being, the light being didn't speak to me, but I knew intuitively, if you will, that I was supposed to look past this light being and down the road, down this dirt path. And the moment I turned to look down this dirt road, and there's a story you've read, if you've read any of the near-death experiences, I saw this huge egg-shaped, blue-white, very luminous, hard to give it a dimension, but let's say 50 feet tall. I was instantly, the moment I saw that light, I was in it. And the moment I was in that light, I felt, and I'm going to use theistic language now, I'm a theist, I'm comfortable with the word God, I felt like I was in the arms of God. I felt embraced by a loving God who knew me personally. Now, what I didn't tell you about, but I came to the ashram in absolute despair. I already had a mantra. The mantra was, let me die. I had done some things in my life that I caught the last train to Hippieville. I had done some things in my life that I had tremendous regret for. I felt just in despair and despicable, if you will. And in this moment, in this blue-white light, in the arms of God, if you will, in this embrace, in this being flooded with this beautiful, beautiful love that just nearly overwhelmed me, I just felt I was going to splinter into a million pieces. I did. I just disappeared. My sense of being just was gone. And I felt like I was looking. You're bearing with me. I felt like I was looking out at the universe, and I had a sense of how everything works. In this moment, that's just way beyond words. I felt as if I had a sense of grasp of how everything works. In the next moment,
I
opened my eyes and was shocked that I was still in my body. I was stunned for a moment. And I looked at my hands, and my hands were so incredible. That I had
to take them out.
I could wiggle and move.
Are you ready for me to send this? This is it.
I was so fascinated.
Oh, I need a subject line.
Really going deeply into my past. I felt like I was on drugs, but I hadn't taken any drugs. We had a vow of celibacy.
Radio.
And strict vegan, vegetarian. This had been going on for months. But I felt I was so high, yet there was an incredible clarity. And then we were sitting on pillows. This is the hippie decade. We were sitting on pillows in this large room. And I felt the pillow beneath me, and I looked at the pillow, and the fabric on the pillow was starving, was stunning, was so exquisite, so beautiful. And I would just rub the fabric and again look at my hands. And then I looked at the carpet, and that was just beyond belief of beauty. And then I looked up at Mahani Bhaji, your name was, this Hindu woman who had conducted the ceremony.
This
beautiful Indian woman. And the moment I looked at her, I felt this incredible love for her, and I recognized that this God, if you will, this source of being, this ground of being that I had just experienced, was in her. I knew that. I could feel it. I could feel the resonance of that being in her.
Well, then they're hearing you and I talk.
I then looked around the room. They were playing about the initiation. And I looked at the other people. And tears were just streaming down my eyes. I was so grateful. It was just so beautiful. Now, the date of this experience, I'm telling you about it, still has a hair on my arm stand up. The date of this experience was July 21st. 1975, at about 9:30 in the morning. Anyone who knows me, more than just a superficial acquaintance, knows that date in my life, because I never missed an opportunity, as I haven't on this show, to talk about it. It changed my life. It gave me a new life. It gave me a brand new life, an entirely new start. In those few moments, my conscience was set at zero. I knew I could start over, that my life began from that moment on, that I knew also that I had a mission in life. The night before, when my name was read as selected for initiation, I spontaneously gave what I later learned is called in some traditions, in the Buddhist tradition specifically, a bodhisattva vow. And Ken Wilber, a contemporary teacher that many of you may know, capsulized it very well. And essentially, it went like this, and what I said was a prayer, in effect, a vow, if you will, to God. And what I said was, if you will grant me this perfect peace of mind, this utter tranquility, this perfect peace of mind that I have been seeking for so long, if this is truly here for me in this initiation, as the Master, as the Guru says it is, I will spend the rest of my life sharing this story, telling others of the availability of it, especially those who come to it in despair, who come along the road that I have come. Now that was 30 years ago, and now in my 31st year since that moment, and everything I do, I've published several books, I've been on shows, and tonight I'm my first show called The Mind Goal Hour. At the core of everything I do, at the core of my goal setting strategies, is the truth that I know that the ability to tap into our authentic self is the critical first step to achieve any goal. Without it, we're going to come back to the Tom Brady story, as I'll call it tonight, today. Tom Brady's question, is this all there is? With millions of dollars, with a bright future, with Super Bowl rings, with every sort of celebrity and admiration and status that you could imagine, has not found his authentic self. He still asks this question, is that all there is? And so he seeks that. If we seek to quit smoking, let me use that one. It's one of my favorite. I do a lot of work with employers, employees, and groups on quit smoking. Quit smoking is a wonderful stress reliever. We inhale and we blow out the smoke and we watch the billowy smoke, and it's a wonderful stress reliever. Of course, it creates more stress, but it's a wonderful stress reliever. I believe that smoking, that overeating, overindulgence of any type, that angst we feel, that Thoreau's quiet desperation that he said most men live, that most men live lives of quiet desperation, that is a search for the authentic self, that real self, that awakened self, that, as Maslow called it, the self-actualized self, that we seek that self-actualization. And until we come to grips with that, that is the core of our goal seeking, none of the achievement of our goals will bring us the happiness and contentment that we seek. I believe that we all search. Many people who have experienced it put it in theistic language, put it in spiritual traditions, and find the truth of that. For me, a few days out of the ashram, I left the temple the next day after that experience. I knew I had received what I came for. The guru had shown me my inner guru, if you would, is the language we use at that time and still made today. I knew that. I left the next day because I knew I received what I had come for, even though I hadn't known in advance how beautiful it would be. I intuitively knew that. And so if you have a goal in mind and you see it as a simple goal, there may be an intuitive stirring within you that says something's missing, and only you know that. And we're going to do a little inner traveling tonight, a little later on during the show. And let's see if a little light goes on, if a little something goes on that says, yes, there is something I'm searching for. And we may find that that's the critical step that we want to take. And so, Tom Brady, if you're listening, it's not all there is. There is something more. Give me a call. I'd be glad to tell you about it and talk to you about it, okay? We find that, you know, when we achieve these goals, as I said, the joy may be there. We achieve a goal, and we feel wonderful, and it's awesome. We won the lottery. But studies show that no matter how wonderful the goal feels to us at that time, in using the lottery winners, a year later, the joy is gone, and often the money's gone, that the joy that we thought the new relationship would bring, the new job would bring, the new car would bring, the bigger house would bring, the new pet would bring, is temporary. It's there, and then it fades. Until we awaken, until we come to that self-actualization, that will be the story of our lives in many respects. And so, during the Mind Goal Hour, I'm going to invite you to take a journey with me to rediscover the joy. One of my favorite teachers said that only as a child you enter the kingdom of heaven. And what I teach in my strategies for achieving goals, the Mind Goal Achievement Strategy, is about rediscovering that joy of being a child, the freedom of a child. Imagine a 2.5-year-old coming into a room, and she's got a new dress on, and she's just sparkling. When she walks into the room, she expects to receive love. She's glowing. She lives in a benevolent universe. All her needs have been met. She isn't worrying about lunch, dinner, the next executive meeting, the next promotion, her relationship. She accepts all of it as just beautiful and perfect and wonderful. And life takes care of her. Effortlessly, she goes through life. Her needs are met.
Jeff?
Jeff?
I'm just breaking in here. I wanted to apologize to you.
Yes, sir.
And to our audience. This is the evening trial, Jeff, and you are doing fantastic. I just wanted to say that I do apologize for, we had one of the intercom buttons still on from our final show. We just built these new studios, and, we're having a little fun and getting used to the buttons, but there are lots of them. So, I just wanted to apologize to you. You're doing a wonderful show, and please forgive the interruptions that you were hearing and the audience was hearing earlier. And I just hope you're having a good time. And I'm just absolutely loving your show.
Oh, okay. Well, great. God, I was afraid you were the hook. it's over.
Maybe that's why I love the show.
Shoot, okay. Well, as soon as my heartbeat just returns to normal, then I'll continue and pick up on it.
You know, that's the beauty of radio. You just never know what's going to happen. And
yeah.
I'll tell you, with BBS radio, well, half of it's BBS. The other half is just BS.
Well, good. I love the slogan of the station.
Oh, thank you.
It's definitely not mainstream.
It's not mainstream.
Yeah, so it gives me great license, and I thank you for breaking in now. You've relaxed me
and
let me step back a little bit, and
Well, you're doing fabulous.
Yeah.
You're doing fabulous. I'm going to let you keep going, and thank you.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. All right. Well, as you heard from Deb, this is my audition. This is my first show. This is they're looking at me as I'm looking at them, and so I'm going to recover from that break in and relax a little bit as I recoiled from a fear of getting the hook. and return to that childhood joy that keeps me in this really deep place and lets me tell these stories with such passion because they are so real for me. I speak from experience. I really try and I make an effort to come from experience and speak about what has happened to me, and I put it in a paradigm, in a model that works for me that I hope you understand, and that it is simply a model. I'm speaking often about things that just really cannot be put into words, and I may use a theistic model. I may use a tradition, or I may speak of Christianity or Hindu. I am very open and hoping that it won't startle you too much. My sense of the masters, I include Jesus as one of my favorites. Yogananda, I love his work. Osho, formerly Rajneesh, had some beautiful, beautiful teachings. There are so many I could name. Certainly Maharaji, now known as Prem Rawat, travels the world, teaches a beautiful, beautiful message about self-knowledge and self-actualization. So this is not a topic that it is esoteric, but it's known by millions of people around the world. And for me, the model I use is I talk about rediscovering the joy of childhood, and I was beginning to talk about how when a young boy, 2 or 3 years old, they live in a benevolent universe. They aren't worried about lunch. They aren't worried about the boss. They aren't worried about a theme paper. They aren't worried about a presentation that they make. They aren't worried about the hook coming in and pulling them up for a radio show. They're just enjoying life. And my point in my goal achievement strategy is what I tell my clients is that is available to you. Now, I know gurus and many of us teachers, and there are some people who, I use the word, the sobriquet that I have called Papa Jeff. There are many people who use that term when they speak to me about that because I speak so much about the inner ability to awaken, the wisdom that we have, and I have a process for that I'm going to talk about a little later before the hour wraps up. And so that childhood joy that we can recover that will give renewed meaning to life that will let us achieve our goals effortlessly, they'll fall in our lap. Once we have rediscovered that joy, that is the critical first step. That's the basis for what will allow our life to unfold and to bring us that fulfillment that even the likes of a Tom Brady ask about. Is this all there is? We need a recovery, if you will, from childhood social coercion. Now, I'm not a big fan of the wounded inner child. I don't look for a trigger event. I don't take a psychological approach. I take more of a flooding approach. Bring that joy of the child back. Bring that back. Let that come alive in your heart once again, and that will flood out any of the negative. I believe that we flood out any negativity in our life by flooding it with positive. And I have little fun things I do with that. I was a preacher for years. I was resisting telling you that, but I was a preacher in a interfaith fellowship for 7 years. And I used to preach different things about... it was the basis for a book I wrote called Taming the Lions of Fear and Doubt, and it was different ways of dealing with different life situations. And one of the things that I used to talk about quite often was something called taking the praise train. And the way I framed that was that every morning we wake up on our nightstand beside us, there are two tickets for the day's journey, and one's the complain train and one's the praise train. Now, the complain train, and you can hear people during the day, doesn't take any more than a moment, to really tune in to which train people are on. You hear them in the restaurant. You hear them at work. You hear them on the train to work. You hear them on the bus to work. You hear them in a variety of settings, and their focus is complain, 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 complain. That's their train. There are other people who are enjoying life, who are grateful for every breath, who share a wonderful sense of being and a joy of just being alive, and if it's just for that moment or in whatever situation they're in the magic for the moment, or it's the bedrock of their life. They have sensed it once again, and they're on a praise train. They if you will, thank God. They thank themselves for being, for every breath, for just the joy of our sensual apparatus, that they can smell the flowers, that they can see the beautiful blue sky, that they can hold a warm hand and feel a hug. They're on the praise train. And what a neat thing is, there's a very easy way to shift the ride. If you find yourself on the complain train, simply think of something to be grateful for. You'll always find something in your life to be grateful for, and just a few moments of shifting that. You know, I really have a beautiful relationship at home. I really have a beautiful car. I really have great health. Find something to be grateful for. It will move you from the praise train, from the complain train, over to the praise train, and rediscover a magic. I want to first. There's a story that keeps popping in, and I'm trying to find a place for it, and I'm just going to plug it in. When I talk about the magic of the childhood joy and the view of life that's so free and easy and open, and just brings such beauty into their life. My wife and I are health nuts. My wife's in the lockdown ward. I go to yoga with her, and we practice Bikram yoga, the hot yoga. That's 90 minutes in a 105 degree room. So it's like doing a workout in Phoenix in the middle of the summer. And she goes 6 days a week, and I go 2 or 3 days a week. So we stay very healthy. We're vegans, and we shop at a store. When we were in Maine, we're now down in St. Petersburg, Florida. When we were in Maine, we stopped at a store. We shopped at a store called the Wild Oats, natural food store, organic food store. And one of my most memorable events, if I could say memorable events, was in this store. It was a few years ago. I was at the checkout counter, and just before the exit doors, I saw two women talking, and there was a young girl, maybe 3 years old, by them, and the women, probably her mom and a friend, were talking, and the young girl was waving her hand, kind of like she had a magic wand. Every few seconds, she would wave her hand, and I just, while I'm waiting to check out, I spotted her doing this, and it took me a few minutes to figure out what she was doing. And what she was doing, as people approached the exit, there were automatic doors that opened up as you, there was a motion sensor or something, obviously, that opened the doors. As you approach those doors, they automatically open. What she did, as people began to approach, she waved her magic wand to open the doors for them. Well, I just thought that was so wonderful. And when I left the store, as I began to leave the store, I stopped before the automatic door opener, and I waited a few seconds, and then she looked up at me, and she saw me standing there, and I just, nodded toward the door, like, open the door for me. And I took a step forward. She waved her hand, and the door opened. Now, I turned expecting us to share a giggle. And instead, when I looked, she had the regal look of a queen. Then she had opened the door for me. And I gave her my very best yogic namaste bow and headed for my car in the parking lot. And on the way, I was just so delighted. It just did something in my heart, and I really wasn't sure about what it was about. And I began thinking about it, and it was like she still had the magic. She still saw life as magic. And we become so sophisticated so early, and we become so socially coerced to sit in our seat, to say the right thing, to think, that we lose that sense of magic. And the intuitive part of us atrophies. It shrinks, if you will. We don't trust our intuitive being the way we once did when we were young and free. We have become so rational that we become, often many of us have become imbalanced. And that imbalance is what creates that contemporary angst, if you will, that sense that something's missing. Is this all there is? It doesn't feel quite right. And my model for expressing that and my way of speaking about that is that we're imbalanced. We're out of the intuitive, rational balance that we have been so handsomely rewarded by being rational thinking beings. Look how early we were molded into that, how getting a right answer in school as early as kindergarten or the first grade or preschool. We got a gold star. We got a good girl. We got a good boy. Think. That what happened is we began to lose touch with the magic. And so the magic of being just escaped us. And we lost that heart feeling, that benevolence, and we live in our head. And what my approach to goal achievement, mind goal achievement, is to recapture that heart wisdom, to listen to a wisdom whisper from the heart. And what I do with all of my sessions, group sessions and seminars or private sessions, I tell people that what we're seeking to do is to rediscover the self, to actualize the self, to become enlightened, if you will. And I approach it with balance. And I tell my clients that each session of me begins with PI. Everybody's happy to hear that. Well, PI is an acronym. As I said, I like to use acronyms. PI stands for Primary Inner Exploration. And what that primary inner exploration is about, imagine, if you will, a pie, and now cut it into 8 pieces, and we're going to put a name with each piece of that pie. And on this primary inner exploration, we're going to look at each piece of pie, and we're going to ask ourselves how we feel about different aspects of our life. And the 8 pieces of pie that I label for this pie exercise, if you want to follow or write it down, I'll go slowly enough. Number one, we address, and these are not in any particular order, how they feel to you. Health and fitness, what we are doing in our life for taking responsibility for our own good health and fitness. Do we get enough exercise? Do we watch our diet? I don't mean diet in the sense of any restriction, that we eat healthy foods, that we tend toward a health and fitness, that we feel good about who we are, and we just make common sense good choices. And so I asked each of us each of my clients to, and maybe listeners, to look at this piece of pie, this health and fitness piece of pie, and just go in and explore where you are right now. What we're going to do is plant roots of where you are right now, where you're grounded. How is my health and my fitness? What is my view? What is my responsibility? How am I handling that? Am I ignoring it? Am I paying a lot of attention to it? Am I married to a real fitness guru? And I watch my words there, because I was talking about my wife, the real dedicated, incredible shape partner. Are we attuned to health and fitness as an important aspect of our life to improve the quality of our life? And in that regard, we go to another piece of pie, and that pie is labeled relationships. How do you feel about your relationships? What do you contribute to your relationship? Do you give 100% in every relationship? Are you unhappy with your relationship? Some relationships, why are you unhappy? Why are you happy? What could be done constructively? So that's another inner exploration. Then career satisfaction would be another piece of pie. Where are you in your career? Where do you want to go? What is your satisfaction level? Another piece of pie, your sense of self, your sense of who you are, your sense of being. And that's a more holistic approach. This pie is round and it's whole. And so as you begin to look at that, your sense of self, what are you all about? Where are you in this whole mix? Another piece of pie, your priority mission in life. Do you have a priority mission? Is it something that captures you, captures your imagination, captures your passion, causes you to bring a new energy, a new creativity, a new enthusiasm to something? Do you paint? Do you draw? Do you have some creative pursuit? Do you want to save the world? Do you want world peace? Is this a mission that just you embrace, that's part of your life? Does that show up in your primary inner exploration? Is there a legacy that you would like to leave, that your life will have been about? Is there something for your children, your grandchildren, for generations to come that you want to leave? Look inside. Have you given that any thought? And now the last piece of pie, actually there are two more pieces of pie, your sense of community, your team spirit, if you will, if you're part of a sports team, if you're in a business, you're a part of a community or a church or a group, what's your sense of being within that group? Are you a positive contributor? Do you bring an energy to it? Do you bring an enthusiasm and a creativity? What does your primary inner exploration say? And the last piece of pie in my 8 pieces of pie is a look at your home and your comfort, what you bring to it, what it means to you. So what I've asked you to do by looking at each of these 8 pieces of pie is to establish roots. I approach it with a balance. We take a drift out into the cosmos as we talk about the inner exploration and this sort of thing. I think it's the ultimate practical way to look. But I do ask for balance, and I do suggest balance and prescribe balance. Take a look at these 8 pieces of your pie, the primary inner exploration, where you are right now. Come into where you are and just begin to develop a strategy, if you will, for bringing a new positive, a new praise train, a new energy into that, and see what that does with your life. Okay, the core of all desires, that missing piece, that intuitive stirring, that quiet desperation, it's a search for balance that we've lost. If you're feeling any of that, there's a certain balance that will come back in. And before I go into the technique, and I'm not big on techniques, I'm not big on process, but I will address that because it's a very natural, and I even don't like to call it a technique. But it's just something I'm going to call your attention to. Might be a better way to talk about it. I'm just reminded that often on a radio show or in a seminar that I might give or guest speaker somewhere, I find that there are three categories, if you will, of people in the audience. And I only use these categories to make a point that when I begin speaking about an intuitive stirring, a missing piece, a quiet desperation, of goals unmet or just a life that doesn't feel fulfilled, that, those words will resonate with some people who are searching for that exactly, and they will listen. We'll see them begin to lean forward, to take more notes, that you can know that you're beginning to resonate, is a word that I love to use, that you're beginning to attune to them, you're speaking to them, and they begin to listen, because obviously what I'm doing in this show is hinting that I have some answers for you, that I have some things that actually I don't have any answers for you, that there are answers within you that you can discover. And so one category of the listener, if you will, would be those who are searching. Then there's another category who have been there and lost it, who know what I'm talking about, who hear the words and say, oh, yes, I've tasted that. I've tasted that nectar he speaks of. I've tasted that joy. I know the reality of that, but somewhere along the line, I don't own it the way I used to. Jesus had a beautiful story about that called the parable of the sower. And he talked about people who receive, and just I got to preface that just a moment. In my model, Jesus' teachings were always about consciousness, always about our ability to awaken and know our connection to our higher self, to our authentic self, to our awakened self, to self-actualize. I believe that was his teaching, always. Everything he spoke about, all his parables were about, if you will, the kingdom within, our ability to connect to God, if you will, to our Father Self, our Divine Mother Within, any of those terms you want to use. There are people that I meet who have tasted that and lived it either for a day, a week, a month, or sometimes years, and somehow feel that they've lost it. They didn't maintain it. And often that was because they didn't receive thorough teaching. They got their piece of the pie. They awakened, and then they ran off into the world. And in the parable of the sower, Jesus said that there are those who hear this, who hear these words, who hear this kind of teaching, that we have an ability within us that will bring us an incredible joy. Bliss is a word you'll hear a lot. We have this within us that is so fulfilling. But that some people who hear that, here he uses the parable, in the parable of the sower, he talks about, he uses a farmer, the metaphor of a farmer, who sows seeds, and some fall on stony places, and they have no way to take root, so there's joy, but it's very temporary. And then there are some who fall on soil, but it doesn't run deep, and so they don't take roots deeply enough, and they wither and die, or the birds come and grab the seeds. And then he spoke of others who land on fertile soil, and they take pretty good root, and I think this might be the category of those who have been there and then lost it, if you will. They never lose it, but there's a sense of losing it needs to be rediscovered. It's still there for them to rediscover. That they hear what he called the word of God, which is that sense of self, that connection to God, that sense of who our source is and what our source is. That they received it. There was great joy. And then the way he talks about it is that we're using the farmer planting the seed metaphor, that weeds grew up around it, and those weeds were the cares of the world, if you want to be biblical, the deceitfulness of riches and the lust of the flesh, that we began to put things more important than maintaining that joy, and it got choked out. And then he talks about another category, which would be the other category that I'm talking about, those who have awakened, who received this shift in consciousness, this enlightened consciousness. And they received it, and he makes a distinction here, they received it with joy and understanding. There was a wisdom that came with it, and they've maintained it, and it is a part of their life. And when they hear me speak of this, they know precisely what I'm talking about, regardless of the model or the paradigm I would use, because it's all the same through all of the traditions. I'm so convinced of this, that it's the same regardless of whatever tradition you're in, spiritual tradition or otherwise, that the words about consciousness, of becoming awakened, of realized, actualized, enlightened, illumined, Christ conscious, nirvana, Satori, Buddhahood, any of those, that these are the same. And so those listening to me are searching. They've been there and then lost it, or they're awakened. And so it's kind of nice, because all of that three class of audience are those who will stop to listen. As I just come back to the balance of it, the rational part that we talked about, beginning with the pie, we've gone into our head, and then we've taken that into an inner exploration. Soon what I want to do is move to the heart, and talk to you about how we listen to the heart and how we can listen to the heart. But first, I want to stay with the practical side of it, and a couple of quotes come to mind. First, an acronym comes to mind, and this acronym is FOCUS. If you have a goal, use this acronym. Approach your goal with focus. The F is fearless, outstanding, outrageous, if you will, fearless, outrageous, commitment to unwavering success. That's focus. A fearless, outrageous commitment to unwavering success. I am going to quit smoking, and nothing will deter me. I love what Eric Meisel said, and he's someone who works with artists and creative people, poets and writers, and I love this quote from him. He said, anything less than a belligerent commitment is a curse. That is so powerful to me and bears repeating. Anything less than a belligerent commitment, belligerent, I'll go to war over it, a belligerent commitment is a curse. Go back to one of my favorite teachers, Jesus, he said it's lukewarm. If it's a lukewarm commitment, you're going to give up at the slightest resistance. These are the New Year's resolutions that we just never come to. Abe Lincoln said to always bear in mind that your own resolution to succeed is more important than any one thing. So I've backed up my approach with some pretty heavy names. Barbara Scher comes to mind, a psychologist I love. She sends out little audio tips, and she speaks around the country. She's been doing it for years, and I've been listening to her tapes for years. One thing she said, I had listened to her tapes going to work for months and months and months, and one morning I happened to hear it, and she happened to use smokers as an example, but you can apply this, you can see the parallels in so many things. And what she said is that there's a tremendous gap, there's a tremendous difference between people who want to quit smoking. If someone comes to see me and wants to quit smoking, they'll quit smoking. I'll send them away with my book. And when I mention the book, the name of the book is You're Not Hooked, You've Been Hoodwinked, You Can Quit Smoking. What she says is that there's a big difference between those who want to quit smoking and those who wish they wanted to quit smoking. When you have a goal in mind, do you want to achieve that goal, or do you wish you wanted to achieve that goal? If it's a wish, then there's some work to do. And I suggest you start with pie, and that you start with focus, that you realize that there's a requirement for a balance. I work with some athletes. I've worked with racquetball players. I work with a lot of golfers. I'm in Florida, so golfers and smokers, there's a lot of them here in Florida, so I have a very busy practice. And athletes, I work with them on this, again, this balance of the intuitive and the rational that I've spoken about a little bit. I haven't developed a lot tonight. I hope I have an opportunity later on. That I talk to them about approaching their game. Let's talk about golf for a minute. Approaching their game, I work primarily with pro golfers, with club pros. And if any of those out there who are listening or golfers know this, there's always something wrong with your golf game. Once your drives are beautiful, and your long irons are great, and your short irons are bringing you up close, you get chip yips. Your chips just aren't working. You get your chip yips under control, and you can't putt no matter how many putters you buy. So I have a revolving client base of golfers. And what I talk to them about is balancing their natural ability, that the mechanical side that they've learned, and that they've hit the ball so perfectly so many times that they don't need to think about that. You know, it's a quote attributed to Yogi Berra, which is tremendously good. He said, you can't think and hit the ball at the same time. Now, that gets a laugh often, but that's tremendous, because as soon as we think, we're back in that place where we've been so rewarded, where we're so imbalanced so often, we're back in that thinking mind. So if we think about hitting it, our muscles tighten. We don't let the natural flow, the natural ability. But if we come to that place with that quiet confidence, that knowing, then that intuitive, that automatic, if you will, that side of us that just knows that it will hit the ball well, is released. Our muscles stay relaxed. The flow is relaxed. And you can parallel that in almost any situation. If you're balancing your intuitive side with the rational side, that's a recipe for success. You're allowing what you've learned to be matched up with an inner knowing that is just fluid and flows beautifully. Okay, so we finished with our pie. We've taken a look at our life and how we'd like at least some of it to be. We define success, and we realize that success is the same for everyone. And so we have our grounding, our roots planted, And now, as I said, I'm going to invite you to cruise the cosmos a little bit with me as I wrap up here in the next few minutes. And I'd like to be your guide on as an inner traveler. There's a magazine called The Inner Traveler. I've had a few articles published in. It's put out by a friend of mine named Bob Rose. He's president of the Meditation Society of America. And what I teach is called the Mystic Heart Meditation. Now, the Mystic Path is a path known to all traditions. All traditions, all religions. That was a combination word of tradition and religion. It's known to all traditions, all religions. It's the talk of the mystic, Rumi, who's reportedly like the most popular poet right now. So there's a growing consciousness of this, of what I'm talking about. There are a lot more people who know naturally what I'm speaking about now, and I noticed this out speaking, that the story of how I came to this, I wouldn't tell 15 or 20 years ago. Now I tell it, and I just get four or five people out of the audience who come up and tell me about their experience and when it happened to them and how this happened to them, and it's just received so naturally. So days are very different, and in my most idealistic, romantic self, I believe, and I believe all enlightened teachers believe, it comes with the enlightenment, if you will, that this is the destiny of humankind, that there is a mystical knowing that is in our heart that we're moving toward as a people, as a human race, that we will come to. If we don't blow up the planet first, then there'll be a new strategy. But I do believe that. I believe that in my heart. And I teach something that has evolved over the past 30 years called the Mystic Heart Meditation. And as I said, it's known in all traditions. The Kabbalists know it. The Sufis know of it. The Christian mystics know of it. The Native Americans know of it. The Buddhists know of it, on and on and on. And it's a very simple process. And what I use as a little word to kind of cue in to this, sometimes if you're facing stress, you're in a stressful situation, sometimes you just want a relaxation technique, sometimes you really want to just kind of get more in touch, the pie doesn't seem to come together for you, you can't quite define what's what, here's a little technique I'm going to wrap up with in the next couple of minutes. I'll give you a word. The word is Kubaha. That's kind of fun to say, so if you say it to yourself a couple times, it'll come to you, and I'll tell you, and I'll bring you to it very quickly. It's called Kubaha. The Q, it's a Q, it's a setup. Oh, that's my cue. I'm feeling stressed. That's my cue. That's my cue. That's my cue. The cue is quiet awareness. This is so simple. If I could get you to do this just a few times a day, it'll change your life in a matter of days. When it occurs to you during the day, take a moment to be quietly aware. Quietly. Cue. Just quietly aware. Stop what you're doing. Take literally a few seconds to just be in the room, be in the field, be in the car, be where you are. Just be. No narrative. Just quiet. Just quietly aware. So that's the cue. To stay in that quiet awareness, pick up on your breathing. Notice when you're inhaling and when you're exhaling. So we're going from quiet awareness to breath awareness, B-A, Q-A to B-A. So we got Q-Ba, quiet awareness, breath awareness. Allow the relaxation, allow the focus, allow yourself to be. And you will feel your body react to this. You will feel your mind react to this. You will shift to relaxation. It is so simple. Try it. And the Ha, the H-A, that's heart awareness. That's when you drop down and listen to the wisdom from the heart. It's the quiet awareness, and just follow your breathing, and just imagine that your heart is sending you a wisdom whisper with every breath. And one day I just will close with this. I pray for you, I hope for you, I expect for you that if you haven't heard it before, that one day you will hear that wisdom whisper. And I'll leave you with that word to just remember, Kubaha. And thanks for listening. I really enjoyed this time. A little nervous starting off. Nev calmed me down a bit coming in with a break, and I really appreciated that. And so thanks for tuning in to the Mind Goal Hour, and I really hope that I get a chance to talk more about it and talk about the many ways that it can affect our lives positively. And thanks so much. This is Jeff Bellier, also known to some as Papa Jeff, and we'll talk about that next time. I'll see you next time.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.